my role is to sort of say something to get the conversation started and then have a conversation with you. My name is Vern Reeke. I live in Seattle. I'm a school teacher at the University of Washington. Once upon a time, a long time ago, I was a lawyer, but nobody will pretend that anymore. And I have been chairman of Holden's board, and I was just telling Dr. Bowman that he has never been on a board and would like to be one. We could probably do something about that. One ought not to go through life without that experience. Boards are indeed peculiar animals, and they do some odd things, including a certain amount of dreaming and sort of trying to imagine what should be done next or what's within the realm of possibility and what would be useful. I was thinking just as I sat here this evening waiting for us to start our conversation, an illustration, and I thought of this building. First time I walked in this building, it was cleaned out in this part. They'd had a store here. Of course, the roof was still there, and wallboard was hanging down, and the upstairs was practically not usable, and it had been still a few rooms down on that end. It had been a lodge like the rest of them once, very bad shape, puck board and insulation hanging around. And we wondered, what does one do with a building like this? As we talked, I said, well, you know, last month I was to a conference of trial court judges up in Glacier Park, and they had a beautiful place with a discussion room. It had, some of you have been there, I'm sure, had two floors with a balcony up above, and sort of a U-shaped balcony up above, and they had a rock fireplace in the middle and a metal smokestack that went up, and it would be awfully nice if I, you know, do you suppose we could rip that ceiling out of there? That's what boards do. And then you think, well, who would do it, you know? So you find nice ladies and school teachers and things like that to stand on ladders and put up boards on the ceiling. And then you wonder about whether or not the place will really burn down. And then you wonder about whether or not you ought to have insurance. And you wonder whether or not it would work well as a discussion room. And I don't know what kind of risks Walt had in mind when he thought about boards taking risks, but that's part of what boards do too, is to try and take some risks. Holden is unlike anything else, mostly because some people 15 years ago thought maybe they could do something that was creative and imaginative and create a kind of a holy vacuum where the Spirit of God might speak to people in some effective ways. Coming largely out of communion of one Christ to another Christ, sort of entering into dialogue and being a Christ to each other in this sort of a setting. So you try and facilitate that operation. Now, when Wes first started going around making people believe that somebody actually had offered to give this place as a gift, that wasn't easy to do in the first place, you know. I suppose people get put away for less than that. It became immediately apparent that there were very few people who were going to take the risk of accepting such a gift, especially when the Forest Department looks at you and says, well, you realize, of course, that you've got a minimum of $50,000 expenditure a year if you don't do anything, if you just leave it exactly as it is and let it rot, because you've got the responsibilities for protecting the property and keeping up the road and all the rest of those good things. And therefore, the various established levels of the church said no, they did not think that they would be able to accept such a piece of real property and buildings, the responsibilities that go into it. So some people got together and they formed a corporation, and I happen to have written the articles for it, capitalized at $5 over the cost of the filing fees, and with that magnificent capital went down to the Department of Agriculture and said, we'd like to accept the property. And they said, how can you finance it? And well, we said, we got $5 and lots of courage. They said that was all well and good, but what else? And LBI had enough intestinal fortitude to that point to say that they would sort of be the sock, the financial sock for a while. In case we got into big trouble, they would be the guarantors. I was still a little bit more like a lawyer in those days. I can remember truckloads of people standing up in the back of the only truck, the only vehicle that Holden owned, dashing up and down, truckload of people standing in the back, the only transportation, going at least 1,000 miles an hour. And I don't know what other people think. My mind, which is not very good at mathematics, was able to calculate the risks involved. And what should it be, you know, after you think, what shall we do with it? We thought it ought to be a place for young people. We thought of a youth program. And it didn't work out that way, of course, at least not in the sense that we thought of, a sort of a narrow age spread. Rather, it was people who were young no matter what their age. That's become sort of a permanent feature of this place. And we sort of stumbled, almost accidentally, I guess, into what Holden is today. No single flash of genius that I remember. All sorts of little sparks and sputterings. You know, what would you do if you had to manage something like Carol Hendroy?
That's right. You know, I can understand. I'm a great admirer of Bowman. Oh, wow, but I think he must have had a tongue-in-cheek when he said he took the board's taking a risk. I mean, we hired Hendroy.
He hired Holden.
To make it even worse, Hendroy goes out and gets the cons of a heretic named Bowman to come out of here.
Yeah, it keeps people awake, if you worry. Well, you know, time goes on, and now we are sort of at this juncture in the life of Holden. In one way, you could say that we have arrived at a plateau. I read an article recently by somebody named Rasmussen, I think, from Wesley something or other, so he's not one of ours.
He was here last week.
Was he really?
Larry.
Is that right? I wrote that. I read an article he wrote, and he's one of ours. Anyway, he wrote an article in which he refers to something called axial points. That means it's an axis. Things turn there. And I've got a feeling that Holden is kind of at an axial point. We are at a spot where, in one way, we've kind of arrived at the immediate goal that we were after. You know, here we are. Carol is still functioning. The building is still here. Mostly, the program is going, but I think the board feels that just as it was 15 years ago, it is now, in the sense that you can't stay where you are. Nothing is unreal as being static. We all know that reality is in movement, and the question before the house now is, where should we be 10 years from now? Now, what should Holden be next? Where do we go? What do we try to develop now? The board struggled with that a little bit today, and we talked back and forth. Betsy made kind of an interesting remark during the day. She said that she liked being on a boardwalk because she never realized that you had to fight off the government with one hand and bring them in on the other one, and buy boats, and think about hiring people, and build warehouses, and get vehicles, and program, and do all of these things at once. And she said, you know, it would be nice if people who come to Holden had a chance to participate in this kind of sort of a... Then we stopped and wondered what the word was. And we finally decided maybe it would be permissible to call it dialogue or maybe even rapping. And so we'd like to rap tonight. And where do you think we should be for 10 years from now? What should we be doing? What's the direction in which we ought to be aiming? If you had the misfortune of being elected to the board after Bowman has finished his term, where do we go?
Well, I remember when Carol first began, he said if we really did the job well, we'd be out of existence, and I hope that never happened. I hope we have some faults going on, so we can still find it.
And we got a couple, their term expires, so.
No, I'll admit that often I say that my grief is not in the dullness of this place. My grief is simply that we have succeeded so well, because I don't think we would have succeeded so well if we were doing this kind of job better elsewhere. And I think it should be done better elsewhere. I would love to see that this makes itself unnecessary as a conversational center. It can be used out in other ways, because that's such exciting conversation taking place wherever you are, because you are discovering each other wherever you are. You aren't blocking each other off. You are being vulnerable, as you heard tonight. And across the line of certainly Catholic and Protestant, across the lines within every kind of community. So you're listening even to what the village atheist has to say. Sometimes he doesn't have so much to say. If you listen to him long enough, he becomes pilot of the boat down here. That's what's happened to our village atheist. And Terry is one of our exciting Christians right now. And we have had our lifestyle atheist, and then he moved over to agnostic. Like Terry said, he didn't know the big words always confused me a little bit. And finally, he moved so far, I said, boy, you got your heart with us, when are you going to get your head? And then finally, the last communion of the year, bang, he does. And mad because he hadn't come before, because he didn't know he'd get such a good hug from one of the gals. That I won't mention, because it embarrasses her. But the excitement of conversation should be taking place everywhere, wherever Christians are together, and using the whole resources that are in the body of Christ in every place, and they're there. I'd like to see Western North Dakota have saunas and therapy pools and live theater going in every area where those little towns find each other and get together and develop. You have to do it between counties out there. There aren't that many people. More wheat than anything.
I think you've infected more places than you realize, because people who go from here take this and begin it where they go.
We've often discussed as a board whether or not we ought to deliberately try to export. Now and then we've talked about satellites or replication. Do it again someplace else. Train cadres and send them out and plant a hole in them in the middle of Texas or something. We've always said, no, that's not a good idea. What do you people think about that? Is it better not to try that and let it happen than this other way? Yeah, Paul?
I'm curious as to what the members of the board think about what works at Holden Village and why it works.
Well, as I think you know, the pat answer to that for years is, if we understood what was going on, we'd control it and destroy it. And in many ways we don't, except one thing, and that is a kind of a repeated insistence on openness, keeping it genuinely in conversation, and being willing to say no to anything that comes with any kind of strings on it. In other words, it is a concept of a free model that rolls and floats and has an almost infinite capacity for adjustment.
Well, let me shift the question then, since I'm not going to give a good answer to that question. Who do you think benefits the most from Holden Village? My own theory is that it's the staff, not the guests. The guests are important, because if there were guests coming up here, there would be nobody to serve. And that this idea of serving is an important magnet, at least. But then for the people who then come up here, get involved in something and working up here, that is very unique. Now, I don't want to, I'm not downgrading the importance of conversation. The conversation that occurs among the members of the staff, when they sit behind the dining hall, dish team waiting for the next meal, or you know, all the weird places where it's a strange and wondrous thing to behold. And it impressed me over 10 years that the most significant thing that happens is those, what happens among people who work here, and why it happens, how it happens. The reason I ask this question is if you start talking about setting up satellite communities, what is it you're going to export? The mountains? Carol Hinderly? The faculty? a place like Koinonia? I mean, the gospel, and what would you end of?
I'd be interested in reactions to that.
You export a risk.
What do you think it is?
Wrong answer.
It's probably why we haven't exported it.
Well, we have volunteer staff similar to this elsewhere, certainly in a number of ventures around the church, in different kinds of structural arrangements. And we've worked with them since 46 ourselves, Mary and I. I still don't think that's the whole story of anything. Certainly it's part of it. I think it's part of the secret of holding hilarity. That's why that dance and serving the altar. But I remember a family from Texas, came from San Antonio back in 64. They were here 1 week. And I went down visiting them that fall, and we had one of our college meetings there with him. In the insurance business, was one of your big Texas insurance firms. He had charge of it out of the San Antonio area. They'd had to sell a house that they'd owned when they came up here. They had to get rid of the bric-a-brac and decor. They had to find a whole new lifestyle in these kind of countries. I mean, I followed this family since. It's interesting to see what happened. He became rather a big shot in the company. I happened to be there in Texas when Martin Luther King was shot, and I saw him that Sunday. He's a very stricken guy. I mean, he was stricken so that he was white. He said, these men I respect, I work with. They're men that whose integrity, whose honesty I always affirmed. I couldn't believe what I heard from their mouths when Martin Luther King was shot. Because I can no longer identify myself with them nor with this guy. And he had the courage taking a risk. He happens to be president of a bank now over in a town big enough that I can't remember Texas town. It's maybe a big print, but it's between Houston, what? Beaumont. And they still got that kind of spirit, and I got a hunch that there's one college there in Houston that's pretty good because he's on the Board of Regents and seeing something the whole window gets in. It's called Rice Institute or something like that. But I mean, that's 1 week.
I would agree with Paul's comment that being involved is certainly a significant part. We've always thought, we've said to each other on the board at least, that people ought to do something with their hands if it's possible, and preferably the man who lectures also ought to wash dishes once in a while or even doing something else. It's easier to get a genuine exchange between people if you meet doing different things where people feel comfortable.
I think it was a stroke of genius when they decided the staff should be full members of the village and not just workers here. And I mean, I think it would just would. I think whatever the magic of Holden that it is, it wouldn't have been without that.
I've forgotten what accident brought that about, but I agree with you. It was fine. Betsy?
I remember when Paul Keller was here. I don't know how many years ago that was. It was Megan found Paul. What is Holden? Mrs. Holden or something, that's right. And I think it was a marvelous time because we were all here and guests and staff and faculty and whatever it was. And he came up with his cameras and he was very enthusiastic. And he started filming. And we all sat here in Koinonia after a couple of days. And he explained to us what he was trying to do in the film. And everybody, whether they'd been here 2 days or 2 years or 5 years, sat there and died because everybody was dissatisfied. It was not what Holden was at all to any of us. And at the end, I think he was nearly in tears. And finally, he had to realize that he could only do this. He could not do a good film. He would have to sin bravely because if he could not, he was not able, nor is anyone, to make a film or anything else to say to anybody else what is Holden. So that I think it's neat that Paul thinks that it's the staff. I sort of agree with him being not, I haven't worked as much, but I've been sort of in that area, right? So, and it's been a fantastic thing to me, so I think it's just neat for, you know, people like me and my kids and so forth. I think everybody, no matter what their function is, it's such a tremendous place that they would defend their position as what Holden is to them. I think it's very hard to say.
How do the non-staffers feel about that?
Well, if you're a non-staffer, you can't know what it means to staff, but you can know what it means to yourself. And each year when our family has come, we've said on the way up, well, it can't really measure up to what our experience has been, and it always has. Not always in the same content, because not always the same people are here at the same program, but we have yet to feel a letdown within the community. And I can't judge if we're experiencing it on the same level that Paul is, but this communication that goes on in the kitchen goes on the road down to the sauna and, you know, among many people.
I know the president of our college spent a few days here, and he's never stopped talking about it. He said, well, you know, like it is at Holdem, and this is what he wants the spirit to be on our campus, and he's accomplishing it to a large extent. I mean, he took something that he could use back there, and he'll never forget it.
I think part of the key might be that everybody is on the same level. This is why staff is important. Family, guests, everybody is equal up here, and you don't find that very many places. And I think part of that is that it's volunteer. Everybody comes and contributes what they can, and nobody measures you of what you are or what you've given or you're working harder than I am. And the guests see this also, and Paul was very aware of that. The man who was in his group discussion said, came last week, and he was a guest, and he said, I've been here two days, and this is a different place than any resort. At the resort, the guests are the status people, and at Holdem, the servant is. And I think here we're all servants, guests too, because guests are included and made to feel they're part of the whole thing. And it's their coming that makes a continuous flowing through that enriches the rest of us who work here. Wouldn't be any good if the guests weren't also coming here all the time, adding their dimension to what is already here.
And I want to add, this man wasn't complaining. He caught on very quickly, yeah. And he was running. He just started working.
I heard an interesting comment today from one of the people who said that maybe this is one of the few genuine universities in the world, because you really do get a universe operating. That is, people from totally different positions honestly talk to each other. That certainly is not true at the university, quotes, where I teach. The standard line there, you know, is that it's a number of faculties related to each other by a common plumbing system. The only contact that I had with other people is the same sewer runs underneath us. If I want to talk to a geologist, there's Larry, you see. Or if I want to talk to some other person who does something else, why, that can be a genuine interchange here among people. In that sense, I think it's rather important that this does happen.
Roald Tweet had an interesting comment, though. He said, I don't think that anybody, if you have to come back to Holdem every year, and it's done for you what it ought to do, you shouldn't have to do that. I'd like to know just about that. Mm-hmm. I would hate to have that happen, because I don't know what we do. This is about some of our people that we keep and really love it and give so much authority to the place.
Do you need booster shots?
You just want booster shots, you don't. I mean, that is the question. Do I need it, but do I want it? I think people come here because they want to come here.
Throw a real chill into you. I remember a few years ago when the board spent the good part of one half day arguing whether or not we ought to legislate how many times a person could be at Holdem Village.
On the staff.
That's right. You know, that's enough. Other people waiting in line, out you go. We didn't do it. Maybe that's the strength of our board, is we don't do very much. Yes, sir.
Kathy and I have been in both positions now. We were on the staff 4 summers ago, and now we're guests. It's interesting when you have the two roles, the servant and the one who served. Not that both don't take place, but you know what? This last year I've become convinced that one of the gifts of the Spirit is to be served, to be in a position of being served. And it's difficult to find a setting where that gift can be used. And yet I think it's such an important gift, because when it is used, the grace of God flows so freely. And I think that's one of the things I've seen happen this time here, is that that particular gift of the Spirit, one of simply being served, is become visible and alive. And it's a very dynamic thing.
And it's being served voluntarily. It's really something. I just was struck with it today, how many, many people have voluntarily served this village in the last years, and the miraculous things that have been accomplished, and you know, the apartment up there, and just the year-round maintenance of the village. And to realize while you're being served that it's being done with the joy of just wanting to do it is really something special.
Small thing, right? I think on the other side of that, having been here in the winter, I was struck many times with the honor of having the privilege of being here, knowing that people's donations out there working hard that are supporting me to live up here. And yeah, I was, you know, putting in a little bit of work, but I think that made up for all the donations that people were giving to let me stay here.
I think another way of looking at that is that before I came to Holden the first time as a staff member, I thought I surely ought to be earning money that summer. But I decided to come to Holden anyway. And just after a few weeks, I began to think, wow, I'm getting free of what everyone else has to pay for.
Part of Holden is the freedom of walking out of my election.
You don't have that freedom, do you?
Well, sure. You can always pick your side down here the next day.
those are very interesting observations that you're making. I certainly would agree with that. I think, for example, that there's, you didn't say it, but the presence of the workers, the young people, the staffers, with the attitude that they have, has just got to be a tremendously significant element of whatever it is that happens around here. That's not the kind of thing that's I don't think it's capable of being planned or induced. It happens out of an environment.
Excuse me, you hear a common thread of the guests saying, so much volunteer work here that I'm getting far more than I'm paying for. And staff saying, I'm getting far more than I'm paying for in my labors. So why are people saying, really, I haven't earned my way here? I don't know if that's theological or not, but
seems to echo.
Show payroll payment.
Well, after about my first 3 weeks at Holden Village, I found myself on the boat headed for Wenatchee and trying to explain this all to myself and some other people and trying to find some words for it. And I found myself saying something like, well, Holden Village is people who are there because they need what the village has to offer, and people who are there because they have to offer what the village needs. And Milhorn said it, and I realized how ridiculous that was, because I don't know anybody who fits one category that doesn't fit the other. And this comes around again on the serving and being served. I can never quite decide whether I'm serving or being served at a given time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that.
I wonder if this isn't just exactly what the mystery of the body of Christ is, just described in that word. When we are in the body of Christ, this is what happens. And it happens so naturally, we don't know where we are exactly, but it's part of the mystery of it.
Well, I think the very fact that what Carol keeps saying, we are all owners of the village, And everybody has a part in shaping it because everybody is listened to. And everybody has some input. And when you have this much creative power coming into the village and able to, and those creative ideas being listened to and used, it's bound to end up in something very, very unique.
Like Werner puts it, I think, so beautifully in his letter to the workers. Don't forget all you heard about the village, because it won't be that way when you're there, because you're there.
But even the board is a unique experience. I'm sure all of you except Walt have been on board someplace. Most of you have expected some kind of compensations, I think, for being on the board, sort of a, maybe even a salary or a honorarium of some sort. It's a unique board. You find out you're on the board, the first thing that happens is the director says, don't forget you've got to pay $500 for being on this board. Everybody's on the board is expected to make this kind of a contribution just to sort of so that he's with it, you know. And I ought to resent that. And why don't I? Maybe it's senility. It's kind of fun, you know. But there is that different uniqueness that runs through, and I think that's what you're talking about. It's kind of a servant thing that's kind of a privilege, and that's hard to come by. Where does this take us? What are you saying to us now? Are you saying that you like a board that mostly sleeps? Don't try to plan? That really isn't true, you know. Some decisions have to be made around here. We struggled awfully hard when somebody wanted to build a swimming pool. We struggled awfully hard when somebody said we needed a chapel. We almost hemorrhaged on that one. You know, there are decisions that have to be made like that. Well, that's right. That's part of the board's job. Every time Carol stands up and says, I quit!
But what's interesting, the very people that were pushing for it when they came up, they didn't tell me. They said, nicely, I just haven't gotten enough grace to go tell Carol he's right, but you tell him he's right. It would ruin the place to have a chapel.
Well, sometimes he is right. Then you recognize that with much grace you can. Otherwise, you spend a week or two letting him think that he was on the other side to start with. There are some decisions that have to be made at Holden, and as I was trying to say when we started, I think we're at a place where we've got to try and think through. You know. There are, for example, things like there's an energy crisis coming up. You know, you're not going to be driving your car 5 years from now, the way you are now. People are not going to be moving around the way they are 5 years from now. I personally believe that I'm going to be paying $1 a gallon for gasoline in a very short time, not driving nearly as much, and so forth. What does that mean for a place like Holden? Does it mean that we ought to be running a bus line? Shall we buy some buses and set up the transport to Wenatchee? You know, pick you up off the train? Is this the sort of thing we should think about?
Before you start the sort of long-range planning, I think for a lot of people this is, with Christianity in mind, this is sort of the real world. This is brotherhood, and this is love, and this is grace. And it's also problems, but it's a community that problems can be worked out in. And I think this place has to be here for people who need a booster shot back to the real world. So I would disagree violently that, you know, you haven't done your job if we're still here 10 years from now. And I would also say, Aldo Leopold talking about the wilderness, and it doesn't apply to a whole lot of other things, but said that man always destroys the things that he loves the best. And I think we'd have to be really careful in the planning not to not to overplan and destroy what we already have here.
Mm-hmm. No, what I would say is the one you hear most frequently is I run all over everywhere. And I say, well, you fortunately got a board that agrees with 100%. And always has from the beginning. And this is, I think that's the beauty of this room, is illustrative of it. This was a shambles, it was nothing. And as Laverne said, a number of people, a lot of gals that helped build it, but you'd be surprised how many women helped put in these posts. They build these logs, they nail some of the nails, maybe they look that way, some of the guys think. But some of the guys wouldn't be able to pound those big ones any better. But it was something, like this, it's just grew. And when you send it, it has life, doesn't it?
It's an interesting tension that develops between doing what we did, hating each other for it, getting a sort of a formalized long-range plan. We did that, you know. Building by building, brick by brick, what we're going to do the next 10 years, didn't pay much attention to it. Useful exercise, thinking it through. Somebody said in the board as soon as we got it, they're valuable because you've forced yourself to think a little bit, now throw it away. And I guess we lost it at about that point. But yet it does have some exercise. There's an interesting tension between planning and not planning, between sort of being realistic about what your potentials are. There's no point in talking about having 600 people up here, you know, one time. That's bad news all the way back. 700, that's bad news. And that immediately draws some parameters for you. And yet at the same time, you don't want to be kept from doing things by being unrealistic. I suppose that Carol has just said the way that the board sort of stumbles around in those instances and lets things happen. When you start out something that you know is somewhere in the span of what you can do, it's a general direction, and then just kind of let it evolve as you go at it. What direction do we evolve? Would you think, for example, that Holden would be a better place or a poorer place if we shot for longer stays of relatively fewer people? We were looking today at the statistics on people days and the number of people in the village. When we started out, it was essentially two-day stays, one-day stays sometimes even. People would come up and have lunch and go back out. The weekend was a pretty long time. Now it's getting longer and longer, and the average stay, is that a good development? Or shouldn't we try to play with that? Shall we just let happen what will happen? It means something in programming, you know, because you can take Bowman once, but if you happen to be here on the second go round in the same cycle, boom.
One of the toughest things for new faculty coming in, and of course, you always have to have some of the old ones to help. One of the few people that ever really made it up here his first week without doing anything was Roel Tweed, who's a rather unusual guy, who'll be in on the 2nd of July. I think he's the only one that we just couldn't use the first week up. They didn't almost have a nervous breakdown because he wasn't. But he had everybody flying model airplanes. It was really beautiful. But this way of doing things where you can't ever finish anything, and Walt Bowman's been my chief example of that, because his first summer up here, he had to give some lectures back in Milwaukee to the southern Wisconsin district of his particular synod, which is a little more than some, even in Missouri Synod. And so he's a little uptight about what he's going to be doing. Let me finish. I got to finish once. Don't interrupt. Can I have 1 week when they don't finish? Remember? I said, okay, go ahead. So he said, well, I'll cut it to 45 minutes and then the last 15 minutes. And then he did it that week. And then he said, don't ever let me do it again. So it's fun never to finish. I was down for their 25th retreat for their pastors there that are from the Free Synod, and they'd asked me because I'm far away for one thing and the other thing, and it was all free of the church, right? And I never had a chance to finish the lecture. I mean, it was exciting because of that. In fact, I hadn't gotten 5 minutes in my first one. Some guy says, how good it happen our prayers like we hear it's happening up at Holden? And I didn't know what he was hearing happening up at Holden, so I could answer him. I just looked at him for a bit. And then he said, all this damned image making. And then when the bishop's president says, yeah, that's it. He says, I don't care if you use a sauna like Hinderly or use a tavern down in your town, but he says, quit being pastors and get with your people as fellow sinners so they can talk to you about where they're at and things will happen. Oh, no, this openness, this vulnerability that we heard today, and that we have. I suppose it wouldn't be good on a campus if he were called Santa Claus, but it's awfully good for Howard up here that he's called Santa Claus. And his fellow faculty at St. Olaf are somewhat distant and afraid of him because he has certain honors and certain disciplines. But up here, anybody can talk to him because he helped lay the stones on this thing and this stuff out there and build a couple of our soundings and make sound, and that's when he comes up here for the sound. Because the minute a guy down here and Endicott hears that Holly Holland's up here, he sends up a couple hundred pounds of wheat so he can make that stuff. Well, he's another guy. It's good for everybody. And there's a distance of a false kind. There's a distance of a real kind. I mean, he sharpens your mind as much as he does in the classroom. And what do you mean when you say, you know, and Howard? But he's always open to continuous interruption. And this kind of excitement of a community where top communication can take place. I'll never forget the first interruption from Paul. I used it before the summer to him, and I don't bring up any old wounds, but it was something. That first interruption simply made that summer for Paul, and he had a path beaten to his door. And if he hadn't said it the way he said it right then, which made him completely vulnerable to every hurt he had, and the community embraced that and was part of its healing too. And then he accused me of being a big, you know, crybaby up there, teary-eyed when I'm saying goodbye to people. So I said, okay, you get up here, we do it today. Then I had a couple of girls worded, and they came up and put a little ring of flowers around his neck as he was up there. Paul goes, oh, oh, oh. And that was the end of Professor Haynes.
Transportation is certainly a real factor in coming back and forth.
Yeah, and I think longer stays, I think, generally are good. I wondered if considering the transportation crisis, if that would be a, I'm sure that's been considered.
Benny, I asked, what were your primary objections to expanding Holden in other geographical areas?
I suppose every member on the board would have to say his own mind on that. My own conviction is that it's really not exportable, simply because it's kind of a unique thing that happens out of a particular clustering of human beings. And I just don't think that you could plan it and bring it off. I think it happened, frankly. I don't know what the rest of you people on the board think. We've talked about trying to export. You know, we've gotten fairly well worked up a few times about a piece of land here or there or someplace else. And every time we've marched up that hill and taken one look and turned around and marched right back down again. Why do we do that?
It sounds to me sort of like an elitist attitude, though. Well, it can never happen again, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I realize I don't know if I believe it could ever happen again, but it still sounds like you know,
that's
sort of like the Jewish people, you know.
Yeah.
I think it happens elsewhere, and it's helped me elsewhere, but evidently it seems to happen pretty much one to a culture, peculiar enough. I mean, Italy has Taze, Francis Taze, Italy has Agape and Greek Benzaiona, and so on. You've got about one to a culture, because I don't know, it's like you say about our church colleges. The reason why some of us are where they go is because there aren't that many good professors to go around, that's all. No matter how much money we have, they just aren't. And there aren't that many top communicators to have. And now, when Darryl was working in, he felt a little bit defensive because he really felt, I love this school from which he graduated, very much so, and it's one of my favorite schools. He said, okay, you have an Anglican faculty up here. And I don't think it's fine. I said, okay, Darryl, I'm not going to argue with you, but I think we helped her. Well, he thought the one that could be the most acceptable. I said, all right, I know him well. I know he'll come, which he did. And he went in 3 days. And it was a real, I mean, he just couldn't take that kind of communication where you've got to be vulnerable. I mean, you can't open it better than what was it. He couldn't be crossed. He couldn't be questioned. And it really was, there's been a terrific tragedy since in this thing. I got to watch it real careful, really. I really do. When I'm, it isn't an elitism at all. It's just that how many communicators have gotten the culture that are open to being, cross-questioned by some guy. We had it happen. Somebody sitting right here where Fred is a layman, who is a professional layman, very conscious of being a professional layman, and some guy sitting about over there where you are, Howie, and trying to get in his questions. He said, wait. And finally, he pulled on him at the end of it. Have you read such and such a book? This is a layman, another layman. And he said, no, I haven't. I didn't even know right to ask this question. Bain and I were sitting right over there where you are, and we both looked at each other, shocked, couldn't believe we were hearing our ears, One layman putting down another layman because he hasn't got access to certain, unique information he's got. Although it didn't belong. It just didn't, and it hurt. And he knew he didn't. And he's been a gracious person, and he still supports the place. But he was uptight on gimmicks and not open to conversational kind of vulnerability. Let's use the word vulnerability since we got it from the Lord tonight. I say you can't help anybody who can't hurt you.
I don't care. I'll just tell everybody how it is. They just listen. So.
I know. Yeah. But they come back at you. Have you heard that word?
Another kind of response that I would give to you, I don't know whether we're getting to what you were at or not, is that I guess, maybe some other board members were persuaded that rather than trying to do Holden again someplace, that it would be much better to let something happen in some other place and let it develop its own aroma.
Well, when you were talking about the staff and what happens between staff members, you have to realize that Holden is in a unique spot. It is in the midst of some of the most beautiful mountains in the world. And I'm sure that if you were to go to, say, Texas or wherever you were thinking of setting up another Holden, you just wouldn't get the amount of staff for you. I think a lot of courage and a lot of energy would have to go into it just to make it go, because a lot of the staff are drawn here just because of the natural beauty. But then I've discovered after being here for a couple of years that I go back because of the community, not because of the scenery.
Yeah.
I think maybe one of the enabling ways that Holden can be exported, Holden can develop is working hard on developing a support base, and it's always a struggle. Carol is constantly having to get money so that we can survive and exist. But maybe the way that Holden can be an enabler and be exported is by developing enough of a support base so that we can be a congregation that can help something else take a risk, or that we can take a risk with funds to help let something else happen. There were two individuals, right, Carol, that did that for you. But there weren't any organizations that were willing and had any kind of a base that were willing to take the risk.
She's speaking the language with which the board closed today, by the way, and the basis on which we passed the motion that otherwise I would not have voted for, that we have something called an endowment fund or something where we set up money that we use for risk capital for other ventures that aren't getting support, that are doing things that we can't do here. For example, one example that I threw in there was what Tom Thule was doing. It's just been with us, some of you know, that little farm up there in northern Minnesota where they can do something with people who are on drug addiction. And we've been able to prove it. And we just said, well, until the grant finish here, they got him off the stuff, and he just made his lifestyle with us. And at the end, we sent several from here over to him. And on that basis, I'm glad to see some funds that might come our way now as we become known.
I just got a little letter from Lilly Foundation over the fight. I'm over there, I shouldn't do it. But they just said, no, what? Why do you ask us for funds? We told them we aren't going to help you, you know. And they aren't going to help us. Now, why? They won't help us, I don't know, because people use Lilly products out here, too. But they won't help us because we're out in the city of Washington. We were in Indiana? No? Another thing. But I'd ask them because I could write four books. And so here's the four books I'll write for the retreat movement for this thing, if you give me just a chance to have a little leisure. I won't do it.
If I had any, if I were planning for this and had any principles, I think it would go something like this, that the unique contribution is in the stimulus that is given to the lay people in the church. It's given to ministers too, but it's focused really. That's what I get out of being here, is contact with really interesting lay people who have great potential and with a little bit of something are going to do a great deal wherever they are. And they not only contribute to each other up here, but they get something. I mean, it's a very mixed up kind of a process that occurs. But in the process, lay people are related to each other. And I feel like a lay person, in a sense, related to other people that I want to stay related to in some sense. So I would think of getting more lay people from the same church or from the same geographical area and developing some way of a continual communication. The thing that's important here is the communication among people who, for some reason or other, begin to feel something that they share. And you can't put your finger on it, but it's something you share, don't we?
Right.
But we just share it, that's all. And if we could think about getting people, if we have a principle of selection and support, it ought, recruitment, it ought to get people who can continue that relationship because of geographical location or the same church. And then we ought to develop like we are with our tapes and do a very selective job on choosing the tapes to keep that communication going. I think we've got a lot of good tapes. One of the problems is in how you choose. Alan was saying, how do you choose among all of them? But somehow to keep that communication going among the family, not with an idea of developing that as another family, I think, but as a way of keeping the life blood going to people who are back there trying to do something where they are. That's kind of the way I think.
You know, Walt was mentioning this connection today as we preached at Leavenworth. I don't know whether any of you happen to have been close enough to Leavenworth to know the impact that Holden's got on that town.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. We've got a whole bunch of CIA people running around doing marvelous things.
Yeah,
an interesting process.
But Al has put exactly why I took this call finally. As Laverne knows, it was offered me several times, verbally and on paper, and I always turned it down. But why I came was exactly for this reason finally. To allow the great layman that God has got in this church scattered around to get together adequately and enough to reinforce each other so that they have the kind of support to make a breakthrough for newness in the Church of Jesus Christ. And it interested me when I had our 20th century monk off to give our special talk to about 400 people that managed to get together. I called Marty. Marty tried to get him up, so there was a Missouri Senate guy there too, because this is Minneapolis, so I haven't been allowed to talk to them. But you know, we're having our 10th anniversary dinner. And I said, Holden Village had its part in shaping up the San Antonio experience for the American Lutheran Church. Now, this is a church that's a great segment, and it turned down any possibility of membership in the World Council of Churches. I mean, and I mentioned we had a couple of good women to send over there, but then were too scared to go over in our theology. There were pastors who never talked to me again in their life. And there we're down. I remember Laverne. He's sitting over here, Jensdale sitting by me, and they talk to each other. Okay, is it going to be the gospel law this time? We have about 10 issues up, actually. All 10 go through. Kids at communion table, you know, 5 years before they're confirmed, and so on, all these things. Women be ordained into the ministry. When Vern brought it up for the church council to discuss, he says, now let's distinguish between the sociological and theological issues
when we start this conversation, of course, right away, we've got a district president right then, didn't know the difference between sociology and theology. In fact, he never studied either. And he made his only comment, I think, the whole time he was on the church council, at that moment, simply saying, we don't want, that's all. No. But, and here we got all that, the biggest vote on that whole, about 10 issues, was 184 negation out of 1,000. What's more, our bishop was really being a bishop, you know, and this had been something Berlin tried to convince him to be before, and so would I. We could both have talked to each other once in a while about, you know, quit listening and start, you know, being who you are. And he was, right from the start. We had a wild time. Well, anyway, this 10th anniversary, I said, Oldman Billy's had his part in shaping up that experience, and Chuck was there at the time sitting at his table, and he just simply shouted out, you bet it did, amen. Just what he said, and it had. Good third of the laymen were Oldman Billy's. And a good third of the pastors were there, the pastors by the young class, and been here or seen their laymen. And you could not possibly have allowed the old obscurantism of our Lutheran protectionism of the gospel to have gotten hold of that convention. It just didn't have a chance to get in, did it? And they were organized. They came in organized. They came in with money. Didn't get any.
It's been almost a city of refuge up here in many ways. It's an island in which you didn't get washed by those currents the same way that you did down in the flatland. Sometimes I felt that we almost had an exemption from the normal restraints. You could do things up here that you couldn't do other places and sort of demonstrate, model. Yeah, Rudy?
Vern, I think one of the great things that happens up here is the interchange or exchange between the three major synods of the Lutheran Church here. We own this together, we share programs, we dialogue with one another, we're vulnerable to one another in many ways, and there's a lot of interesting risk-taking, I think, that goes on in this kind of situation. I would only hope that this becomes more of a reality in many other places, and this sort of serves as a model.
You're even vulnerable to Methodists.
Yeah. But it shows the kind of cooperation that can exist.
We just let them be around.
Well, it's interesting, the pastor said this, he isn't here right now, but he's mentioning the communion service of a Sunday ago, that this was his greatest experience of ecumenicity he'd ever known. Now, he just sensed this in the celebration. Here we were gathered together, God's people, and we weren't branding each other by our small T's, because the great T was there, the living Christ who shapes us all up, his body. And this was exciting for us. That's a direction I think we're moving, whether we like it or not. We brought a little bit up. I mentioned we didn't talk to it too much, but there's no question that more and more non-Lutherans are feeling the appeal and are coming and want to be a part of it, which makes it may be even more difficult for anything called a Lutheran foundation to support us. This may happen. This little venture I talked about on that farm in Tom Drew's got turned down because they don't ask if the drug addict is a Lutheran. They just ask if he's a drug addict and wants to come and be part of their little community of six workers with eight people who are on drugs, and they are there to get them off. And I think this is what I love about the place so much, is that I can be in Jesus Christ towards all as he asks us to be. The scripture, this little book I just put out, impossible to have a good people.
Well,
you know, we've been talking about what Fulton is in terms of communication, in terms of lay people, in terms of ecumenism. And I realize, I think we've taken for granted the one thing that we do have that's unique, that perhaps indeed can be exported. And I think we are deeply indebted to our director for that. What he just said puts it in a nutshell, that which we have that creates communication is not manipulation and gadgets, but the living presence of Jesus Christ through the scriptures, through the word, in Carol himself, being Christ to one another. But I think that's the thing that we haven't mentioned yet tonight that makes Holden Holden, that this is not something created by sociological techniques, but it's that continual reminder that Carol not only tells but is to us of the presence of the suffering Christ and the joy of celebrating his presence. And I think that's the key to the unique experience that is Holden. And I'm not so sure, but what this kind of a focus cannot be exported. Toledo, you know, has studied us this way. They'd love to have a downtown area that has a live-in situation between, under a shared space, using this whole energy crisis thing, so there are shared automobiles, there's a shared pet, like we have a couple dogs, we have three during the summer with chaos for 400 or 300 people. And they've really been aching on how to do it. They realize it takes some architects and some contractors. It's a contract committee three times just dreaming it, thinking about it. Perhaps Toledo is one place where it may break through. It's, I think it's possible for us